So as I raised our children and we went out on the land every summer on horseback, into the woods, into the bush, I never took a compass or a map. I simply remembered that each time we took a new trail to look at where we had come from so that we could find our way home. Well, in a very real way, we're in this situation of being on a new trail, a trail called reconciliation, a trail that's called a recognition that some things in the past didn't unfold well in our relationship as First Peoples and newcomers to this land, that some of the agreements that we made about how we were going to live together in the land didn't unfold in a good way. They weren't kept, they weren't honored. And central to all of that were these residential schools where newcomers felt that they had the right to take our children from their homes and families and communities to educate them away from the places of their birth and their ancestry and their people and communities. And central to our experience today in this land we now call Canada is this reality that this took place and that the consequences of it are still with us today and that we must deal with these things. And we're dealing with them in this process that we call reconciliation. And we're asking the question today, what's your part in reconciliation? Now in the scriptures, the first instance of a cultural conflict takes place in the book of Acts, chapter 15. And it reads this way. Certain individuals came down from Judea to Antioch and were teaching the believers, unless you are circumcised according to the custom taught by Moses, you cannot be saved. Acts chapter 15, verse 1. Now, I'm going to invite you to follow the rest of the chapter at your leisure. I'm not going to read the whole of it. But I am going to summarize some of what it says. So these believers down at Antioch come along and say to others, you have to obey certain things in order for you to be saved. Now, the believers were from the sect of the Pharisees. Now, what do we know about Pharisees? They're lawyers. Any lawyers here today? Okay, so I'm free to make lawyer jokes, right? They're the people who keep the law. And their responsibility was to ensure that nobody transgressed. And so they're really anxious that these new people, hearing about Jesus, called Gentiles, come into the faith in a good way. Makes sense? And that's what residential schools in part were about. Ensuring that First Nations people, Métis Inuit peoples, experienced Christian faith in a particular way. So these individuals, believers from the sect of Pharisees, come down and they say, you guys down here, you have to be circumcised. Now we're talking just about the men. Just to be clear, you men must be circumcised and you all must obey the laws and the customs of Moses in order for you to be saved. Now, what are they saying? What does it mean? Does that mean that you and I, because we're Gentiles, have to men be circumcised and all of us obey the laws and customs of Moses? Well, I don't think so. I don't think that's what it means for us today, but that seemed to be what they were saying had to happen. So if you follow the story, here's what takes place. Paul and Barnabas and others say, hold on a second here, just a minute. We've been unable to keep the law. We've been unable to maintain all of the requirements of it throughout our people's history. Why are we now going to place this massive load of expectation on these new believers called Gentiles? Why would we do that when we haven't been able to? Furthermore, why are we expecting them to become like us first before they can become faithful followers of Jesus? And you see, that's the nugget of this whole passage. This really wasn't about just the laws and customs of Moses or about circumcision. It was about what had happened all through the history of the Jews among Jesus' ministry. They had become culturally so fixated on Jewish culture that they expected others to become like them. And this is really a cultural statement. You must become like us. You need to walk like, talk like, think like, act like, be like us before you can become followers of Jesus. And we know that because at every turn, the Pharisees were trying to trap Jesus, weren't they? They're trying to trap him. They're trying to make him say things that would, okay, so now you've really messed up, so now we've got you. They try to trap him at every turn. They had built a cultural package around what it meant for them to be followers of God. A big, huge cultural package of laws and customs and interpretations and values and expectations. And they were now trying to put this set of cultural expectations on Gentiles. Now, they brought this case to the first meeting of the Jerusalem Council, and they said, these guys need to become like us. And the Jerusalem Council made a decision and said, no, that's not what needs to happen. There are only four things that need to be required. Refrain from blood, meat sacrificed to idols, meat strangled, and fornication. That's it. If they do these things, they'll do well. So what are the cultural expectations of Christian faith? Like, what culture do I have to live in order to be an authentic follower of Jesus? Is it Euro-Canadian? If Euro-Canadian, is it Euro-French-Canadian? Is it Euro-Scottish-Canadian? Is it Euro-Irish-Canadian? Is it Euro-German-Canadian? Is it Euro-Syrian-Canadian? What culture do I need to live in order to be an authentic follower of Jesus? See, that's what they were demanding. This wasn't just about the Mosaic Law. It wasn't just about the Ten Commandments that Charlton Heston brought down off the mountain. Right? It's not what it was about. And it wasn't just about circumcision. It was about they had developed a cultural package around their service to God. They walked a certain way, talked a certain way, acted a certain way, lived a certain way, liked a certain kind of music, engaged in certain kinds of activities that were their culture as they sought to serve God. And God himself had created the framework, to be sure, but they had expanded on it so much that it had become this massively overwhelming cultural package. And ladies and gentlemen, that's the same thing that's happened in this land. That's really what residential schools were about. It was about the Canadian government's effort to civilize us, to make us into good Canadian citizens, citizens of the British Crown initially, and the church to Christianize us. And when you look at the history, and that's what we've been talking about in many of our workshops, when you look at the history really carefully, well, you don't even have to look at it that carefully, you can see that there is this cultural expectation that's a significant part of the government's and church's efforts to make us into good, brown-skinned white people. Now, admittedly, I'm a little pale. So I'm a Mi'kmaq with some Acadian blood coursing through my veins. So I get to play cowboys and Indians all by myself. And I don't have to ever worry about where the other person is in waiting in ambush, right? I know exactly where they are. It means because I've got this Acadian blood in me from my mom, that I'm a little paler hue, I'm a little bit pigmentally challenged. And I can also grow hair on my chest because of my mom. Unlike my father, my brother, the rest of my relatives, they can't. So what does it mean for me, Terry LeBlanc, Mi'kmaq with some Acadian blood, what does it mean for me to be a follower of Jesus? Does it mean I have to jettison my ribbon shirt? Does it mean I have to cut my hair? Does it mean I have to take off my earrings and get rid of my jewelry? Does it mean I can't play Kevin's wonderfully made hand drum to make music, to sing? What does it mean? See, back here in the book of Acts 15, the Jewish believers were trying very hard to tell the Gentile believers and everyone who would listen that Gentiles needed to first become Jewish before they could become Christian, before they could become followers of Jesus. That's what it was about. And the council said, no, it's not. There are only four things to be concerned about, and I can guarantee you that you've probably never been concerned about blood, meat strangled, meat sacrificed to idols. Hopefully you've been concerned about fornication. But I can guarantee you haven't been concerned about the other ones. But they said they were requirements. Now, I know in this province as well as others, if y'all are going for a driver's license, y'all, that's a southern term. All y'all is the plural. So if you're going for a driver's license, I know full well that there are requirements, expectations, essentials. If you don't meet them, you don't get the license. Simple as that, right? So when the council said there are four essentials or four requirements, my question would be, if we want to be authentic followers of Jesus, why aren't we keeping all four if they're the requirements? And of course, we would come away with some reasonable, well-thought-through, biblically-framed responses to that that I think are probably appropriate. It had to do with the culture of the day and creating fellowship between Jews and Gentiles and all that sort of stuff, but perhaps other than the fornication piece. But we would not come away from that passage, that conflict between two cultures, and say that you have to be Jewish first before you become Christian. So why do we do it today? Why do we continue to expect people to live into our cultural norms and values, our cultural practices, our preferences, and our beliefs about how we live with respect to things like finance, the land? Why do we do that? Well, it's because we do have preferences. We do like certain things. The challenge becomes when we expect others to like the same things. And the big challenge becomes when those of us who are followers of Jesus expect others to be like us in order to follow Jesus. To walk like, talk like, act like, think like, be like us. That becomes the problem. And that has been at the focal point of residential schooling. Civilizing us, Christianizing us, and I must say, with the back end purpose of getting rid of us off the land so that it was unobstructed. But we're still here. We have to work it out. We'd figure out this reconciliation thing. So when I came to faith in Jesus back in the 70s, I was told I had to cut my hair, take off my jewelry, get rid of all my Indian stuff, and just be a good old Euro-Canadian Christian. Just be like us, they said. So I said, okay. I fell in love with Jesus. I fell in love with Jesus' teachings. I fell in love with the way he talked about life. I fell in love with the challenges he issued to people who thought they were really righteous. I loved it. And I wanted to be a follower. And these folks had been doing it longer than me, so I thought they were right on. Let me know when I'm... So I said, okay, if that's what it means. And it was years later I discovered that wasn't what it meant at all. It didn't mean I had to stop being a Mi'kmaq person. In fact, God wanted me to be the best Mi'kmaq person I could be. And that's what Jesus entering into my life created the potential for. But we had to get rid of everything. And our people today, most of our folks today, still struggle with that teaching that your culture's evil because it's uniquely an integrated spirituality, which is true. It's Hebrew in its thinking. We integrate things more quickly. But it doesn't mean I have to get rid of this drum. So I make drums. I didn't make this one. This one's Kevin's. But I make drums, and when I make them now, because we were told for so very, very long that these things are evil, and the moment you play it, you're calling on a spirit. That's what we were told, not by ourselves, but by others, at least initially. So when I make them of a straight-grained wood, so very straight, no crookedness, no sinfulness. and I used deer hide. And I know that the deer was a sinless deer. So it didn't go cavorting with other does. So no drinking, dancing, smoking, chewing, or going with those who did. So it was a sinless deer. So when I thanked the deer for giving up his life and we ate the deer, I used the skin and I make drums, right? So sinless wood, straight, pure, sinless deer, make a drum, make a beater, make a sound. Seems pretty straightforward, right? But we were told they're evil. Somehow those ones are okay, right? Those ones are okay in those guitars. So I used to think to myself, well, if somebody playing a Fender Telecaster in a honky-tonk strip joint bar gets wonderfully and gloriously saved, and then 6 or 10 months later comes to the pastor of the church and says, hey, I'd love to play the guitar with the band Sunday morning, we probably don't look at that Fender Telecaster the same way we look at my drums. We probably say, okay, maybe we should pray over it just in case there were some evil things hanging around. We might do that. We might not even do that. We might just say, cool, come on. Come do it. Let's go for it. But when it comes to this, it's somehow different, right? So I figured it out. So now every time I make a drum, I do it the same way, exactly the same way, but I inscribe right here in the frame on my drums, I inscribe the word Yamaha. Good to go. Right? That's all it takes. Because Yamaha are made over there in Japan by the Shintos in the little Shinto temples. So you can see how frustrating it is, right? It's like, I don't see that in the Bible. I don't see thou shalt not play the drum. In fact, I see you will honor him with music on the timbrel and the lyre. And it's like, I don't see thou shalt not use drums. I don't see thou shalt not wear a ribbon shirt. Thou shalt not wear jewelry. Thou shalt not like thy culture. I don't see those things. I don't see them in the scripture. I see the need to avoid evil personally and collectively. I see the need to avoid things that we have been told clearly in scripture are immoral, like fornication. That's why it was there in that list of four things. It's not a good thing. It breaks down relationships between people, causes things to happen that ought not to happen. So I see the need to do that, but I don't see them saying, thou shalt not play the drum. But the residential schools were significantly about exactly those kinds of things. Civilizing us because somehow we weren't. Christianizing us because somehow if we were just Christianized, meaning become European in culture and come to church, everything would be cool. And doing so in order to make way. And this is clear in history. I'm not making it up. To make way. It's clear in the documents of the Archives of Canada. To make way for European expansion, unobstructed by those doggone savages. Now, in the records of my family's marriages, so we go back to my ancestor. Our ancestor was baptized on June 24th, 1610. His name was Kichisagamal Membertu. Our records go back a long way, and back there in the records of our marriages and births and deaths in the Catholic Church record books, you see these records. There are four intermarriages in my lineage with Acadians going way back. And every time there's an Acadian person marries a Mi'kmaq person, it's Jean-Louis Leblanc. And on the other line, une femme sauvage, a savage woman. Pretty cool, eh? So our surname was Savage. That's how they thought about us. They had to civilize us. And they had to move us. And the church has been complicit in that. That's what this is about, reconciliation. Residential schools were the focal point of it for 180 years, give or take a few. We got to figure it out. we got to walk differently in the land. And we have to walk differently by not expecting native peoples to become like you in order for them to be followers of Jesus, or in order for them to live well on the land that you also live on. That's what we got to do. So I'm going to sing a song to close. This is probably one of the oldest songs. It's a little flat. I should have heeded it. it's one of the oldest songs of my people. And I'm going to tell you what it means so you don't get all bugaboo about it, right? I don't want you to get the heebie-jeebies. I'm not calling on any spirits. But I am calling on us to do something. This is called the Mawiumi. I'm not going to sing it all five times through as we would normally do. We'd be here for a while. But I'm going to sing the song, and it simply invites us to do this. We play it every time we gather in what we call the Mawiumi, the place of health and well-being. And we invite our people to come from all of our seven districts, from the four directions. And we sing one verse for each of the four directions, and then we sing a fifth time for the gathering. And the invitation is to bring our gifts, bring the things that we've been given, to share them in the gathering. For without everyone's gifts, our gathering is not complete. And that's all it says. Collie, could I get you to bring me that water? Just on the front seat there. I'm a little dry. Thank you. So the song is simply to say, we need one another. And in this land, I mean, we're not going to build a big boat and send you all back home. Might be an idea. But it's probably not going to happen, right? So we've got to figure this out. And we need to figure it out in a way that stops doing what we've been doing. So one of the first things about reconciliation, whether it's with God or anybody else, is stop doing what caused the rift. Right? Just stop it. So if you want to walk in a reconciled relationship with God, you stop it. If you want to walk in a reconciled relationship with your girlfriend, you stop being a jerk. Right? If you want to get your boyfriend's attention, you don't flirt around. You get his attention. If you want to be faithful to your wife, you honor and respect your wife. You know, it's just pretty simple, right? Stop doing stupid things. So let's stop doing stupid things. That's a theological word. So here's a song. And I'm gonna sing it just a couple times through. And it's an invitation to bring our gifts and share them together so that our gathering might be a good gathering. Not that many years ago, this chapel wouldn't have been a place I would have been able to sing that. Not that many years ago. I've been coming to Briarcrest since the 80s for gatherings with the NEFC, where we're trying to figure out what does it look like for us as Native men and women to follow Jesus. And this would not have been a welcoming place for this instrument or that song. We've come a long way. We've come a long way to working out what it means for us to follow Jesus together, but each in our culturally different ways. We still have a way to go. We have a long way to go for reconciliation, and most of you, and I want to say this graciously, most of you haven't got a clue about how we got here because you don't know the history of this land. That's something you need to do. My grandfather's story to me about looking where I've been so that I can understand where I'm at, so that I can find my way back, is apropos today. We have to look at where we've come from. You have to look at where we've been. Our folks know it, by and large. We know our history. We know how we got here. But you folks who are non-Indigenous in this audience this morning, you need to know how we got here. I don't care how old you are. I don't care how much you think you know. You need to understand how we got here. Otherwise, we're going to repeat the same mistakes in the future. And we will not be able to walk in a reconciled relationship. And we will be just like, yet again, the folks in Acts chapter 15 who said, you must talk like, walk like, think like, act like, be like me in order for you to follow Jesus and in order for me to like you and in order for us to get along in the land. So let's figure it out. Learn where we've come from so that we can figure out where we're at and so that we can walk into our future, whatever that might look like, in a good way. Thank you.